It's Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Farage. You're with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up on Central Time, we'll look at the role nature can play in healing some of the divides in Milwaukee.
First, Wisconsin politics are heating up as Republicans and Democrats begin to outline their agendas and budget priorities. We have news that the Chief Justice Selection Bill passed the Assembly. It already passed the Senate and will go on to voters in April.
Also yesterday, state Democrats announced an agenda focusing on raising the minimum wage and expanding Medicaid with federal funds. Today, Governor Walker announced his workforce readiness plan, which looks to expand job training and require drug tests for recipients of public benefits.
Governor Walker is also making news today that might interest politicos who are waiting to see if he's going to make a run for president in 2016. He announced plans to travel to New Hampshire, and he also has plans this weekend to head to Iowa.
Here to give us the lowdown on the coming legislative debates and more is Scott Bauer. He's a correspondent with the Associated Press covering Wisconsin state government. Good to have you back, Scott.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, so much happening today. Hard to know where to start. Let's go with this Chief Justice Selection Bill, now passed both chambers. First, what does it change if it ultimately is passed?
Yeah, the Constitution currently requires that the most senior member of the Supreme Court serve as Chief Justice. So it's an automatic appointment based on who's been on the court the longest. That currently and for the past nearly 19 years has been Justice Shirley Abramson. The amendment that the legislature passed for the final time today and that will go to voters in April will leave the selection of the Chief Justice not to who's most senior, but instead to a vote of the seven justices on the court. So Democrats who oppose that say it was targeting Abramson, who is viewed as one of the more liberal members of the court, while supporters say, 22 other states already do it this way, and it makes sense to have the justices decide who they want to serve as their chief rather than have it be an automatic appointment.
Republican lawmakers got this done fast, so it could be, I guess, on the ballot in April. Has that been a point of controversy?
That's been one of the arguments from the other side, is that if you're going to amend the Constitution, why not wait and put it on the presidential ballot in 2016 when turnout is substantially higher than it will be in April? And the supporters say, this is something that can be decided now. There's no reason to wait. And let's put it up for a vote as soon as we can, which would be the April 7th ballot.
Now, the governor next week will make his budget recommendations. That's coming up pretty soon. He's spoiling it a little bit with his workforce readiness plan he talked about today. And one of the ideas here that's been talked about for a while, drug testing recipients of public benefits. First of all, what's the scope of what he's proposing there?
Yeah, so there's a little bit old, a little bit new in his plan. He had talked in the campaign that he was going to be doing this, that he's proposing that people who receive, childless adults who receive Medicaid, folks applying for unemployment benefits, and a variety of other aid programs would have to pass a drug test. If they failed, they would be offered free drug treatment and worker training options. He's not releasing a whole lot of details today about how this is going to work. There's been similar programs in other states that have been found to be unconstitutional. So there's almost certainly would be a legal fight over that. But this is something he had talked about during the campaign and that he most likely will be talking about as he's traveling around the country.
And is this something that's going to be in the budget, which I misspoke, will be the week after next and not next week? Is this would actually be part of his budget plan, this drug testing?
That's correct. That'll be part of his budget plan. It comes out on February 3rd. He kind of released a few other details about other initiatives today that are targeting worker training, workforce development, that sort of thing, and he put this in with those.
Yeah, so what are the other highlights of this worker training, worker readiness plan he released today?
Another new idea he put out today that was interesting is that he wants to create a new path for people to be licensed to teach in Wisconsin. He's proposing that someone with what he calls real-life experience would be able to take a competency test and then be automatically licensed if they pass that test to teach in the state. School administrators, the State Department of Public Instruction, the Statewide Teachers Union are all raising concerns about that, saying that it does nothing to ensure that people are instructed on how to be an effective educator. It's just saying if you have real-life experience, you can pass this test and then go in and teach in middle school or high school. So that's a new idea. That's something that is almost certainly going to generate a lot of discussion.
Yeah, the drug testing, this teacher training thing, both points, that'll be controversial. Anything that you see in this workforce readiness plan that might get more bipartisan support?
There are a number of items in there related to technical college, scholarships, bolstering opportunities there, you know, a number of other things that target money to specific areas in Milwaukee and around the state that almost certainly will have bipartisan support. But the higher line things like the drug testing and the teacher qualification, that'll definitely be debated.
And also a change in the amount of time people can be on W-2, Wisconsin Works, one of the forms of public benefits?
Right, going down from a 5-year total lifetime allowed on the program to 4 years. You can bet that will not go quietly.
All right, but ultimately, Republicans control the Senate and the Assembly by wide margins, so even if Democrats there aren't happy, there's a good chance these things could pass.
That's right. I mean, what you see and what you saw in the past 4 years when Republicans also had the majority is you have to rely on either Republicans raising objections or there being a significant enough outcry from other folks that they agree to make changes. Democrats alone raising objections, they just don't have the votes to get anything changed.
Now, the Senate Democrats here in the state announced their agenda yesterday, a lot of budget-related items, things like a minimum wage increase, expanding Medicaid with federal funds, increasing education funding, I think close to the level that the Department of Public Instruction is looking for. Any surprises in that list from the Democrats?
No, the Democrats are, you know, they're talking about a lot of the same things they talked about during the election last year, what you just mentioned there, relieving, finding ways to provide more relief for college student loan debt, things like that. A lot of issues that they've introduced in recent years and that have gone nowhere. They argue that these are the things people really care about, and Republicans argue if that were the case, then you would have won in November. So really what you have here are Democrats staking out kind of their ground and what they believe in. But these issues they're bringing up are unlikely to get any traction in the legislature currently.
Yeah. Anything apart from the things I mentioned that Democrats were putting forward that might get Republican support? Or is it, as you say, just markers for elections next year?
Yeah. I mean, there are always things that will get bipartisan support. There are issues that will come up here and there that both sides can agree on. But right now, while we wait for the budget to come out, you're just seeing a lot of really a lot of posturing, and we'll see kind of where agreements can be found as we get along here in the session.
We spoke with Representative John Nygren on the show last week. He said he saw at least some interest among Assembly Republicans in some measure of increased educational funding. Didn't have a number, probably not as much as the Department of Public Instruction is looking for. Do we have any indication or how much Republicans are thinking of adding to education funding?
No, there's so many pieces of that puzzle that remain up in the air. We're waiting on new revenue estimates. We're waiting, obviously, to see what the governor puts forward. We're waiting on any number of things that could affect that bottom line. So, you know, Democrats obviously are out there saying that they want close to what DPI is asking for, and the governor has signaled pretty clearly that that's not going to happen. So we'll just have to see what comes out in the wash.
There's been a lot of attention to Governor Walker's itinerary over the next few weeks. What are his travel plans?
Yeah, he's got a busy schedule. Saturday, he will be in Iowa speaking at an event that's attracting a number of other conservative potential 2016 presidential candidates. It's his first trip to Iowa since September. Also this weekend from there, he's flying out to California for an event that's organized by a group affiliated with Koch Brothers. And we just learned today, AP was the first to report today, that the governor will be going to New Hampshire for the first time in March, of course, an early primary state, and speaking at a state Republican Party event there. So he's definitely putting the miles on as he eyes this White House bid.
So Iowa, New Hampshire, major donor events. Is this being seen as a strong indicator that he's planning to run for president?
I think it's being seen for exactly what it is. You know, he said that he's seriously considering it. He's hired someone to be an advisor on this effort. He's making the rounds as anyone would be at this point. He's saying all the things that anyone would say as they seriously consider a run. The only thing he hasn't done so far is confirm that he's definitely in.
Scott, thanks a lot for joining us.
You bet, anytime.
That's Scott Bauer. He's a correspondent for the Associated Press, where he covers Wisconsin state government.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, debate over the budget is beginning in the Wisconsin legislature. Governor Walker released a worker readiness plan today, and he's set to release his entire budget in his address a week from next Tuesday.
First, when it comes to solving the problems in Milwaukee, or nationwide for that matter, there are no easy solutions. Too often the problems seem too big to tackle or too complex.
But our next guest says little efforts can go a long way, and one easy way to establish common ground and bring people together is right under our noses if we just step outside our houses and get out into nature.
Joining us now is Glenna Holstein. She's the branch manager of the Menominee Valley Urban Ecology Center. She recently wrote a piece called Why a Walk in the Park Matters in Milwaukee. Glenna, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So, Glenna, you're an urban ecologist, and in your piece you talk about, you know, you're kind of questioning whether what you do matters when you're up against some of the big issues that Milwaukee is facing, things like segregation and poverty and violence. Why are you having doubts like that?
Yeah, I think that across the board in kind of in the nonprofit world, we have this tendency to kind of silo or section ourselves. And you can just kind of put your nose to the grindstone and work on the things that you think are really important. And then all of a sudden something will come across your plane of vision that reminds you how many other important issues there are and how much other work needs to be done that's kind of outside of your little box. And I think I have so much admiration for so many other groups in Milwaukee that are doing important work. And so I think, you know, when the first of the year comes around, it's always a good time to question, hey, why am I doing what I'm doing?
So what did you decide about why your work matters in healing Milwaukee?
Yeah, I think, as I said in the article, and I'm really grateful to Milwaukee Neighborhood News Service for giving me the platform to speak there, but I think there's, it kind of comes down to two things for me. One, that the something that our community and maybe our country as a whole is really missing is common ground. And I think that parks and working in urban nature can sometimes be literally building common ground. I think that it's so important to have a place where people that don't agree on everything, that have different backgrounds, that have different ways of thinking about things, can come together and enjoy a space together, or maybe even work to improve that space together. So I think that parks and working in parks provides that common ground. And I also think the second thing that I talked about in my article is that that I think that cultivating a love for nature or cultivating environmental awareness, really what it does is it creates this admiration, this respect for all life. And I think that it's so important at a time where we're talking about you know, animal lives mattering. We're talking about plant life here. We're talking about human life. White life, brown life, black life, all of it matters very deeply. And I think that really cultivating that respect for life can go a long way toward addressing a lot of the issues that we're facing as a country.
To take your first point about there not being many common spaces where people from all different walks of life gather, I mean, this is, you know, seems to be more and more true in today's world, especially as third places disappear, places that aren't the home where we can feel at home. And parks are one of the few remaining spots where anybody can just show up and run across someone they may not normally interact with. Do you see that playing out in the parks of Milwaukee?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's so heartening to me to get to spend so much time in parks in Milwaukee. As we all know, Milwaukee is one of the most, if not the most, segregated city in the country. And when I go into Three Bridges Park, which is the park closest to where I work, I see people that are all different races and all different backgrounds that are hanging out there and using it in different ways, which is really exciting. And, you know, in Washington Park, where we have another branch of the Urban Ecology Center, actually this weekend we have coming up our Winterfest celebration. It's on Saturday afternoon. And it's just, it's the most incredible event, I think, maybe that we do all year, because it really does draw from all different parts of our community. And you see people of all different colors there trying out skiing maybe for the first time, or enjoying pies that have been made by folks in the community, or petting sled dogs or whatever it is. But everybody can find something to enjoy in a park. You don't have to agree on everything to be able to enjoy that together.
Do you ever see this as kind of being like an ecosystem? All these people, all these organizations, everyone has their own goal and objective maybe, but ultimately all the pieces have to work together. Do you see it like that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, as an ecologist, you kind of think of everything that way. And it's so true in a community like Milwaukee that we really are only as strong as each of our parts. And so it's so important to think about the ways that we can make each part of our community strong, because, you know, the work that we're doing in at the Urban Ecology Center, or my personal work or life, is really only strengthened by everyone being strong and healthy, and so and whatever that means for each individual person. So I think that whatever improves the life or improves the work of one part of our community is really going to help all of us in the end. And I think that those connections are complex, and they're not always easy to see. Just like in a natural ecosystem, you don't always know what effect one little thing is going to have. But I think that it's really important to remember that that one small thing can have a bigger effect than you anticipate, because everything is so interconnected so deeply.
So these parks are a big part of what you're talking about here, but sometimes in a big city, it can be hard to find those green spaces if you're not already clued into them. What do you think needs to be done to get people aware of the parks and the nature access that Milwaukee already has and get them seeking it out?
Yeah, well, we are so lucky in Milwaukee to have such an incredible park system. We have a ton of county parks and city parks all over, and I think that, I mean, part of it's just a matter of going out and exploring. I love that I can discover a new park every week if I tried. There's so many. I think that the urban ecology centers are a great access point for folks who are trying to start exploring Milwaukee's parks. We have one, as I mentioned, in Washington Park, one in Riverside Park, and then one near Three Bridges Park, the one where I work. And our goal is really to connect people to nature that's right in their neighborhood. And so we have all sorts of programs that we offer that allow people to start exploring their parks. And we also have a really cool equipment lending program that we have for our members, so people can borrow equipment from us and go explore the parks on their own, so they don't have to own stuff to get out there, you know.
What kind of equipment?
It's all across the board. You know, this time of year, we're lending out a lot of skis and snowshoes. And then the rest of the year, we've got camping equipment, we've got bikes, we've got canoes and kayaks, fishing poles, and gardening equipment, lawn games, you name it. Anything that you could use to get outside, we try to have it on hand so that people can use it to go explore their parks.
Nice. Well, looking at the younger generation that needs to be on board with nature to keep nature thriving and relevant in everybody's lives, what do you think it's going to take to get kids involved and invested in green spaces and parks and nature?
Well, you know, it's interesting. We recently had the chance to partner up with the Medical College of Wisconsin and do a study, actually talk, and we ended up talking to a lot of kids about what they thought about green spaces. And it became so obvious to us that kids know that green space is valuable. They know that it's a place where they like to be, that it calms them down to be outside, that they feel less stressed, that they feel more connected when they're out there. And so it's really a matter of the adults kind of getting out of the way in some cases, you know, of really just creating that access for kids. And so so part of our goal at the Urban Ecology Center and in a lot of organizations like ours is to really keep these spaces safe and active so that kids can come and enjoy them either on their own or with their family. So I think really what it takes is just making sure that kids have access, because they know that it's something that they need and that they really like, and that connection, the connection is really natural. If you know, most kids, if you get them outside, they will find something that they really like out there that piques their curiosity.
there's some evidence that being out in nature, particularly near water, but being in nature can reduce stress levels. And in a community under stress, that becomes especially important. Do you see people going into these parks, these green spaces, exploring the riverways, and coming out changed?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I see so many people that go for walks on their lunch hour or on their break in Three Bridges Park, and I know that they're doing that to find a space apart from the bustle of their stressful life. But I think we see that with kids a lot. You know, I've seen that in some of our programs where a kid who maybe struggles in the classroom and, you know, is under a lot of stress for whatever reason in his or her life, finds that nature is a place where they really can excel, where their heightened awareness or their heightened energy level actually allows them to be successful in that environment, and they realize that this is something that they can really connect with, and it's really pretty magical to see that happen. So yeah, I would say that we sometimes do see folks change as they experience the park.
And Glenn, in your last couple of moments here, is there a favorite spot that you've got right now that you especially love getting out into in Milwaukee?
Well, really any of our parks. Of course, Three Bridges Park is a favorite of mine, and I get to go there very often. But there are so many. I think Pulaski Park and Jackson Park on the south side of Milwaukee are incredible. This time of year, Lincoln Park is great for skiing. There's just so many. Just pick up a map and go to a green spot. They're all great, really.
Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Have a great day.
We've been speaking with Glenna Holstein, branch manager of the Menominee Valley Urban Ecology Center.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. A week from Tuesday, Governor Walker will announce his proposed budget and open up the debate over how to fund Wisconsin's governmental agencies for the next 2 years.
As it stands, Wisconsin has a projected budget deficit of $2.2 billion. That projection could change in the coming days when new revenue estimates come out. But as it stands, the deficit means that Wisconsin will need to prioritize some budget requests over others in order to make ends meet or raise taxes.
This morning, Governor Walker began the debate when he released his worker readiness program. Among other things, it would mandate drug tests for recipients of public benefits and expand job training programs.
Last week, we spoke with Representative John Nygren, co-chair of the Joint Finance Committee, about the budget. He said his caucus, Assembly Republicans, would be interested in raising education spending some amount. He also said he did not expect the deficit to persist after new revenue assessments are made and budget decisions are made as well. Here with us today now is Senator Lena Taylor from Milwaukee. She is also a member of the Joint Finance Committee. Senator Taylor, welcome back to Central Time.
It is such a pleasure to be with you, and hello to your listeners.
So before we get to the budget, Governor Walker this morning announced his worker readiness plan. It includes drug testing recipients of a wide variety of public benefits. What's your response to this part of his plan?
I'm actually somewhat challenged. I do understand the concept of job readiness, and I even understand the issue of addiction, but I think it is really more of a mental health issue for individuals, and services is the problem. And by trying to address the issue from a punitive matter, it really doesn't help people. And it's punitive if we know that services are not available for people on the ground because we haven't expanded, our acceptance we haven't accepted the funding from the feds to expand Medicaid. And as a result of that people aren't necessarily getting services that they need or have access to service. It's only punitive then, because you're punishing people who have mental health issues for not being able to have services to be able to get the help that they need. So, you know, that's really challenging for me. I think it's a backwards way of trying to address the issues that we've been told through audits, we've been told through our corrections population, we've been told through justice reinvestment, and frankly, we've even been told most recently through crises like the issue of Dontre Hamilton in the Milwaukee area that mental health and access to services for individuals and their families are huge challenges.
From what you've seen of the rest of this worker readiness plan, are there parts of it you could get behind? Things like tuition freezes for particular technical skills, that sort of thing?
You know, I definitely can get behind things that say that we should invest in our people, that we should invest in training so that individuals can get the kind of skills that they need for the industries that we know are the industries of the future, the industries that have great need in our state. Even as a member of the co-chair of the Unemployment Task Force, working with my colleagues on the other side of the aisle and in my community on job issues, job readiness issues, and access to industry, and thinking out of the box on how do we address issues for people who are reentering, I can see working with the governor and my colleagues across the aisle on those issues. But when we don't have fair wages, when wage equality and living wages are a challenge for many Wisconsinites, and those things aren't addressed, it definitely creates challenges. When we aren't investing in our universities and we have freezes, but we're not giving the funding that's needed so that they can have the courses for people to be able to move forward, that's challenging. When we're not investing in the health of our people, that's challenging, because who can work if they're not healthy and able to go?
Well, moving to the big picture of the budget, why does Wisconsin have this $2.2 billion projected budget deficit?
Well, there's no question that, you know, if you were to ask many of my colleagues on the Democratic side of the aisle, one of the reasons we have the deficit is because we gave away dollars to, you know, their friends or to corporations, and we didn't invest in our people the way that we needed to. Instead of knowing ahead of time that we should have waited for revenues to come in and to look at things in those fashions, as well as, let's not forget, the whole issue with the casino and the lack of revenue that has come in from Pottawatomie because of I don't know if I can call it a violation, but definitely not feeling that the compact that they have with the state has been honored has created different revenue streams for the state. And so unless we invest in our people so that we can invest in jobs, we're not going to be able to move the state. And it's because, as you know, we're at the bottom for the creation of jobs, creation of new businesses. Those are the things that the governor ran on originally, all promises that he did not keep.
Now, that $2.2 billion, it's based in effect or in part on what all the departments are asking for. It's pretty normal, Democratic governor, Republican governor, that those departments ask for more than they're going to get. There are going to be cuts. Is the budget shortfall really as bad as it looks when we say that $2.2 billion number?
Well, I think it is, because I think what the departments have asked for are the types of numbers that they think that they need. As a matter of fact, a meeting with the Secretary of Transportation, I mean, the infrastructure in our state calls for what the Secretary Gottlieb requested. Whether or not he'll get that is different. And so in the end, I think that the requests are realistic, especially when you think about our schools. Our schools received the largest cut, the largest cut in the state's history. And when the governor did increase funding in his next budget, it did not put the school system back where they were. So I believe that the needs are reasonable, that each of the departments have done. I think the question is, how will we move forward?
Well, looking at the revenue side, Governor Walker ran in part with promises to cut some taxes in the state. Assembly Republicans, legislative Republicans did the same. They won. Should they follow through with plans for tax cuts in the state?
Right. And we know that they won partly and mostly because of redistricting, which should be done by an independent kind of entity instead of the partisan way that the maps were drawn. And clearly, you know, should they deliver on tax cuts? I think the larger issue is, should they deliver on making sure that we create economic security, working on workforce, investing in our people by making sure that we have the kind of job training that's needed, investing in our children and in our future by investing in K-12 education and doing more of the creative things we've been doing with technical colleges to line up training with industry. Those are the places that I think that we really need to work. And if we work on justice reinvestment, we can potentially create some savings, because corrections was one of the number one spenders for the governor in his first budget. And this time around, we see a ballooning correction cost, you know, millions of dollars. We lead in the nation in incarceration of African-American men. So I really believe that those are the places we need to invest in, thinking differently about corrections, investing in our children. And most definitely, if we would have thought about how we proceed in healthcare differently.
Well, I want to stay with taxes for a moment. With property taxes, we're the fifth highest median property tax rate in the country, according to the U.S. Census Bureau. Income tax, we're not the highest, but we're on the high side, higher than our neighbors Illinois and Michigan, lower than Minnesota and Iowa. Is there some room for tax relief in the state and possibly boosting the economy by leaving more money in people's pockets?
I think there's no question if we think about how we fund our education system and not making it so top heavy on property taxes that we potentially could create some relief in that fashion. However, with the present budget crisis that I would argue that we're in, as well as deficit that we're in, I'm not certain what kind of, and even from Speaker Voss's comments, I'm not certain what kind of relief in the areas of property tax we're going to be able to do if we really want to continue to promote the Wisconsin way, which is to make sure that education is available for our people, that training for workforce and jobs are available, making access to businesses, small businesses in particular, and trying to get people to create more small businesses, and investing in the health of our people. Those are things that cost. They cost us. But if we rethink how we do corrections, we can reinvest those savings in ways that, in turn, may not generate that property relief that you speak to, but it will generate staying on the course of the Wisconsin way and dealing with the kinds of things that we value as Wisconsinites. I mean, if we don't invest in Wisconsin, if we don't invest in our children, and we don't invest in our people for training and protect the environment, I really believe that we lose our way.
Looking at the education part of that you were mentioning, the Department of Public Instruction, their budget request looked for an increase of a little over $600 million. You and your Senate Democratic colleagues were also calling for an increase in a statement yesterday. Do you think it should increase as much as the Department of Public Instruction is asking for?
I think more than anything, we have to figure out what we can do if we're spending the dollars that we are. And literacy and graduation rates in some of our populations are in such crisis states. Clearly, we can, you know, look at what can we do different? How can we wrap our services differently? But I'm going to say this. Our schools are not funded at the levels that they should be necessarily, especially when you consider that they received some of the largest cuts that they had in the state's history under the governor and that they've not made up that ground. So I don't want to, you know, speak saying specifically that I agree with the superintendent's budget fully because, candidly, I've not looked at that in its entirety yet. I will get an opportunity to, but I will say that there is, even in our worst times in our state's history, we've always invested in education. We've always invested in our children. That investment is an investment in our future. So I believe wholeheartedly that we should make sure that there's quality education for all children and that we should make sure that that system is working in that fashion and that we should make that investment. That's a good investment. I can't say I specifically agree with everything that the superintendent has done because I don't know what those things are, but I promise to come back and tell you as I have a better sense of what the superintendent's requests are, whether I think all of those pieces should be funded. But in the end, I believe that we should be investing in K-12 education, technical colleges, and our universities because the short version is that's an investment for workers. That's an investment for our businesses to have what we need so we can compete.
Senator Lena Taylor from Milwaukee is with us. She's a member of the Joint Finance Committee. We're talking about the coming debate over Wisconsin's budget.
And we'd like to hear from you at 800-642-1234. There's a projected deficit of $2.2 billion at this time. How do you think that should be accounted for? Would you like to see increased funding for roads or for schools? Do you want to see property or income tax cuts? Call us at 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll pick up the conversation after a look at the news with Kristen Durst. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're continuing our conversation with Senator Lena Taylor from Milwaukee. She's a member of the Joint Finance Committee. We're talking about the coming debate over the state's budget.
We'd like to hear from you now at 800-642-1234. A projected budget shortfall subject to revision, but a little over $2 billion. How do you think that should be closed? Spending cuts, tax increases? Where do you want to see budget priorities? Is it schools? Is it roads? Is it tax relief? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll go to a caller now. Dennis is with us in Elroy. Dennis, hi.
Hi. I just have a question regarding our spending per student in the state and in Milwaukee. I was wondering how Wisconsin ranks in just overall spending per student compared to other states, and even in Milwaukee, how that stacks up. I know our property taxes are fairly high, but I didn't know if that was comparative from a spending standpoint. So I'll just take my answer off the air. Thanks.
Senator Taylor, any thoughts on that?
I think the first thing I'll say is thank you for your call to the caller and your question. Specifically, I can't give, you know, the numbers for every district or something along those lines. But in the ecosystem in Milwaukee alone, if you consider all of the different mechanisms or categorical aid that there exists for students, somewhere between, depending who you ask, 10 and 15,000 per student, depending, in public schools. For the children in charters, it's about 7, 8,000. For children in vouchers, it's about 6, 7,000. And the difference kind of goes back in the pot. And it is distributed to individuals in all districts, Democrat and Republican districts around the state. So the quote-unquote savings that some would argue that I disagree with that the state has, then that difference, some of that is made up on local taxpayers in Milwaukee through the voucher program. And otherwise, those private schools that accept vouchers and those charter schools have to fundraise to try to make up some of that difference. Either way it goes, when you get done, if I look at what's happening with the kids in my school district, the children that are, for example, challenged in reading proficiency, there's failure in each of those school systems across the ecosystem. So the real question is, what do we do, whether it's urban or rural Wisconsin, when we're dealing with children who are in poverty? Because that's the commonality that we see that creates a challenge. That's why I say that we need to rethink how we fund education, period, so that we can make sure that we get the quality.
And we do have some numbers from the National Education Association. The state as a whole, 19th in the country, apparently, on per student spending. Milwaukee spending per student higher than places like Chicago, Philadelphia, Baltimore, other cities. Republicans often say it's not how much money per student, it's are we using the money wisely for efficient, effective education? Is that where we should put our focus, not so much on the dollar amounts?
Not at all. I think the issue is about the services that are being provided. Children are in traumatic circumstances. It's not like necessarily when my grandparents were growing up. They're dealing with many challenging things. All the studies show that. We see that there's a commonality across poverty, whether it's in, you know, any of the different types of schools that are in our ecosystem. And so how are we wrapping around those children and those families to provide them with the services that they need? And many of those things are lacking in so many of the schools because of many reasons. So, you know, art may be cut, gym may be cut, all the things that help children to be creative. There may not be enough psychologists or psychiatrists to be able to help children to be able to address issues or, trauma that they're experiencing, may not be any music. These are the kinds of things that we know that help our children to be able to succeed and, frankly, to grow up and be analytical thinkers.
I want to bring in another caller, Senator Taylor, before we're done.
Bring back.
Rick is with us now in La Crosse. Rick, hi.
Hello. Hi there. One of the things that I need to discuss, I don't think many people in the public realize that by federal law, private schools, the public pays for transportation, non-religious textbooks, food, and technology. So anything that, you know, I think that there's these private schools, and now we're paying voucher on top of that, so we're paying the tuition. And most people in the public have no idea that they are paying for public schools for all these things, food for the kids, transportation for the kids, textbooks for the kids, and technology, so computers.
Rick, thanks for the call. I want to give Senator Taylor a chance to address that. He's worried about public funding for private schools in the form of vouchers and other spending.
I think Rick has some true concerns that people should think about. I think in some schools we've learned sometimes there are not even any textbooks that are available for children. Transportation costs, I don't know that is always true or a reality. There are vouchers that I think parents get, or I shouldn't say vouchers, but checks that parents get for their transportation costs for children. One of the conversations I have with the Secretary of Transportation is, wouldn't it be nice if our transportation budget actually included public transportation for our children, and not just a budget that was for highways, concrete, you know, and that kind of effort. Those are realities. Transportation costs are realities for urban and rural areas. Our challenge at this juncture is, you know, it's kind of like being married. If you're married and then you get a divorce and you're trying to take care of two households, with us having multiple types of schools in our system, it's like trying to take care of multiple households or multiple districts, multiple education mechanisms. And it's not something that we can do on the same dollar. We've got to rethink how we fund. We've got to rethink how we get to quality and a common standard. And frankly, people should become more informed. I think Rick is onto something there. People should become more informed about exactly what's happening with their dollars for the various type of schools and what the requirements are.
Senator Taylor, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
I've been talking to Senator Lena Taylor from Milwaukee about the upcoming budget debate in Wisconsin. You can continue our conversation over at the Central Time Facebook page.